It is Thursday, October 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the leaders of Spain and Catalonia escalate their standoff regarding Catalan independence. Turkey's new marriage law sparks fears of underage matrimony, and a new documentary by Chinese artist Ai Weiwei highlights the plight of refugees around the world. It's all ahead. Spain's government set plans in motion Thursday to strip Catalonia of its autonomy after the region's leader vowed to continue a vote on independence. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy's office said it planned a special cabinet meeting for Saturday to trigger Article 155 of Spain's constitution, which gives the government power to take away some or all of its autonomy. Hours earlier, Catalonia's leader, Carles Puigdemont, said the Catalan parliament will go forward with a vote on independence if the Spanish government does not engage in dialogue and follow through on its threat to strip the region of its autonomy. Rajoy had given Puigdemont a Thursday morning deadline to clarify whether he had in fact already declared independence following a referendum earlier this month. Jeff Rathke is a senior fellow in the Europe program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He describes to me why strong feelings have swirled around the issue of Catalan independence in Spain.
There has been strong feeling in Catalonia for quite some time, but I think that what we've seen recently is an indication that there are strong feelings on both sides of the question of Catalonia independence. For many years, there have been the annual demonstrations on September 11th, and you've had large turnouts for those people in favor of independence. And of course, you saw that as well with the referendum back on October 1st, which had a large turnout, even though it was less than a majority of people in Catalonia who went to the polls. But what you've also seen since then, at the same time you have people protesting against the use of force by the police authorities, you also had hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating in favor of remaining part of Spain. So that makes this even more complicated, because it's complicated the relations between Barcelona, the Catalonian capital, and Madrid. But at the same time, within Catalonia, you have a very polarized opinion.
Well, Catalonia's leader, Carles Puigdemont, had indicated that perhaps more time can take place for the representatives of the Madrid government and the Catalan leadership to have more discussions, more negotiations. But apparently, Madrid does not want to do that.
Right. I think it's important to focus on maybe two factors here. The first one is what the Spanish leadership, including Prime Minister Rajoy, have always gone back to is the provisions in the Spanish Constitution, which do not allow for separatism, and so that is the touchstone, the North Star for the Spanish national leadership. And so they've always been reluctant and really unwilling to discuss the Catalans' desires for independence, because they consider it simply unallowable and unconstitutional. At the same time, after the referendum, the Spanish Prime Minister Rajoy, along with the leader of the main opposition party, the Socialist Party, they have discussed convening a commission that would look at constitutional issues. So they clearly recognize that this is a problem that won't go away. But what Prime Minister Rajoy seems to be unwilling to do is to engage directly with the Catalan leadership, in particular Catalonian leader Puigdemont, about this particular issue. So there's a certain power politics happening here at the same time that there is a national constitutional issue that Rajoy is trying to manage in a different way.
Is the ghost or shadow of the former dictator, General Francisco Franco, does he still affect some of the sentiment in Spain and in Catalonia today?
Well, there has certainly been a sense of history and of Catalonia's separateness that the Catalan authorities have cultivated and promoted over the years. Some of that has to do, of course, with the repressions that took place under Franco, and then they go back to the Spanish Civil War, and then they go back even further than that. So that certainly plays a role, but it's also it's also pretty clear that over the last few years, the Catalan leadership has really been pushing things toward independence, and so there's been this polarization of opinion that leaves Spain right now in a bit of a dead end. Finding a way to move forward without antagonizing further the independence-minded portion of the Catalan population is a real challenge, because the situation has been allowed to deteriorate to such a great degree that pulling things back is going to be quite hard.
Jeff Rathke, Senior Fellow in the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, usually it's the current president that gets the most attention on social media on any given day. But today we're talking about a former president, George W. Bush, speaking out at the George W. Bush Institute about a host of issues in a speech that many are praising, talking about the influence of social media and foreign influence, saying that's very dangerous. Talking about the political divisions in the United States. And then this line that's getting quite a lot of attention on social media, saying that bigotry and white supremacy are blasphemy against the American creed. So very strong terms against that. Perhaps fitting with those remarks, one of the other big trending stories today is about Richard Spencer, the white nationalist, who's set to speak today at the University of Florida campus. So hashtag Spencer at UF is trending, as people are already reacting. They're reacting negatively to the University of Florida for allowing him to speak. Others are saying it's free speech under the First Amendment. He can say what he wants, no matter how awful. And so that's renewed that debate. And a lot of people are already concerned at what might develop as a result of this, thinking about the protests and the clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia, between white nationalists and counter-protesters. But perhaps my favorite thing, a brewery in Florida said that people who hand in their tickets to the event, instead of attending, they'll get a free beer. So their goal is to try to get people not to attend this event and to go have a drink instead on them. So that campaign has been going around. But all eyes are going to be on Florida today as he speaks there, and hopefully nothing violent will come of that.
Yeah, very much so, very helpfully. All right, well, thank you very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A Senate committee may subpoena the White House's cyber advisor. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will attend the first meeting between Saudis and Iraqis aimed at improving ties between the countries. Kurdish rivals trade accusations over the fall of Kirkuk as fears of violence grow. And some families reportedly don't support President Trump's claim he phones all grieving families. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
One of the biggest challenges NASA faces to meet its goal of sending humans to Mars in the 2030s is how to protect astronauts from the dangers of space radiation. Earth is bombarded by radiation such as cosmic rays, which are generated and spread throughout the Milky Way, and high-energy particles produced by various solar events such as flares and coronal mass ejections. We're pretty much kept safe by our protective atmosphere and magnetic fields. But those traveling beyond the range of these natural protections would be subjected to the life-threatening dangers of space radiation. While many think this problem will keep the space agency from reaching its goal, those who are working to address these issues at NASA say that they are confident the techniques and technology they're working on will keep those who will be traveling to the Red Planet safe and healthy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, President Donald Trump meets the governor of Puerto Rico at the White House. The Turkish parliament passed legislation Wednesday allowing imams to perform marriages. The reform has been strongly condemned by women's rights groups, warning it would exacerbate the problem of underage marriages. The new law comes amid wider concerns over the erosion of women's rights under emergency rule. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
We won't be silenced, women chant, protesting in the heart of Istanbul over legislation allowing imams to conduct marriages. Since Turkey is a secular state, only state officials were allowed to carry out marriages. The new law met stiff opposition in parliament. Şanal Saraham, parliamentary deputy for the main opposition, CHP party, says the new law undermines secularism, which helps to protect women's rights. She said this is an attempt by the ruling party to impose their political understanding to regulate life according to religion, and this is against the constitution, and we are not accepting this. The reform has led to fears it will exacerbate the problem of underage marriages. Women's rights groups emphasize that imams are already carrying out marriages involving underage girls in unofficial religious ceremonies. But Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is seeking to consolidate his religious voting base ahead of presidential elections, has strongly backed the reform, dismissing criticism as alarmist.
Ya isteseniz de istemeseniz de. Bu meclisten geçecek. Kayıt dışı nikah değil.
They are heading to the streets making a fuss. Whether you want it or not, this legislation will pass in the parliament, Erdogan said. The marriages will not go unrecorded. They will be under record. On the contrary, this implementation will abolish unofficial marriages. Erdogan claims a reform will legitimize marriages, particularly in Turkey's conservative rural regions, where marriages are often only carried out by imams. Women's rights groups counter that the problem of underage marriages remains a major problem in these regions and has grown due to an earlier government reform allowing older girls to study at home. Child marriages had been curtailed by a campaign a decade ago supported by Erdogan to increase girls' attendance at schools. Critics claim Erdogan's ruling AK party has in recent years moved away from its reformist policies, becoming more authoritarian, a process accelerated by the introduction of emergency rule following last year's failed coup. Under emergency rule, many women's rights groups, especially in Turkey's rural Kurdish region, have been shut down. With a presidential election looming and Erdogan seeking to consolidate his religious and nationalist base, women's rights groups are voicing growing alarm about the direction in which the country is heading. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The governor of Puerto Rico is meeting with President Donald Trump Thursday at the White House to discuss how the federal government can help with aid, rebuilding, and recovery efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. Ricardo Rosello arrived in Washington as basic necessities, food, water, and power, are still in short supply on the island a month after the storm struck. Rosello asked Trump earlier this month to expand the disaster declaration so that federal funds can be spent on fixing damaged schools, buildings, and power plants. The governor has also asked the White House and Congress for at least $4.6 billion in block grants and other types of funding. Trump spoke about Puerto Rico's financial situation following the hurricane.
I have given my blessing to Congress, and Congress is working with you and your representatives on coming up with a plan and a payment plan and how it's all going to be funded, because you are talking about some substantial numbers, and I guess you knew that. But I know you were talking about rebuilding your electric plant long before the hurricane. You've been wanting to do that for a long time. So maybe this is a reason that we can do it, and we'll help you and we'll all do it together. But I will say this, the people of Puerto Rico are amazing, just incredible people. The spirit they have, the strength they have, what they've gone through. Many were isolated in areas where there were no roads, there were no bridges, the bridges were wiped out. It really was incredible to watch the spirit that they have. And they did it with grace. They did it with a smile in many cases. It was really something beautiful to watch. So just please extend all of our warmest regards, and we're with you.
Rosello also spoke of the island's recovery.
That is the importance of the short-term and long-term packages that will be in Congress, right? We're going to need some resources. Of course, FEMA is there for the initial response. There is some rebuilding to go through. So that's why, you know, we're thankful to the president for supporting these petitions to Congress so that we can get the resources, liquidity to kickstart the economy, and, of course, the long-term rebuilding process.
Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rosello. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Human Flow by internationally acclaimed artist and activist Ai Weiwei highlights the plight of refugees around the world. The Chinese dissident is not the first to make a documentary about the displaced, but his film captures the massive flow of humanity on our planet from on high using drones. I filmed in 23 different countries in 40 different refugee camps, people fleeing war, environmental crises, and religious persecution. His goal is to show that the flood of refugees has global repercussions. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with the artist.
Being a refugee is much more than a political status. It is the most pervasive kind of cruelty that can be exercised against a human being. You are forcibly robbing this human being of all aspects that would make human life not just tolerable, but meaningful in many ways.
According to the documentary Human Flow, over 65 million people in the world today have been forcibly displaced from their homes. Using cameras attached to drones, Ai Weiwei films humanity's movement from up high.
Human flow as always happens in the human history. It's, in many cases, it's part of our humanity and our civilization.
But the social anomaly of our times, says the filmmaker, is the effort by countries to stem that flow by preventing refugees from crossing borders and integrating into new societies. After a harrowing sea voyage and days of walking, many refugees from the Middle East make their way to northern Greece, only to be stopped on its border with Macedonia.
Over 70 borders are built up their fences and walls, and forbidden any refugee to pass through. So by doing that, they really not only stopped the lifeline of those refugees to find a safe place, even just temporarily across the border and go to another location, but also put them in extreme dangerous condition.
2 months old and born here, but he didn't have any vaccination, no showering facilities. The hygienic situation is very bad.
Ai's look at the refugee crisis is as intimate as it is global. Human Flow shows masses fleeing wars, religious persecution, and environmental disasters. Ai Weiwei warns if we don't save those people from displacement, entire generations born without identity, prospects for a better life or a country, will be vulnerable to extremism and radicalization.
Those people, those child, when they grow up, they only see how their parents being badly treated, unfairly treated, the world watching but not doing anything. What kind of image would remain in their mind?
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of features as well as news stories that should interest you. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The president, in consultation with the Secretary of State, determined the administration is unable to certify under a domestic law that the benefits Iran receives from the nuclear deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, are proportionate to the measures Iran has taken. After completing a review of U.S. policy toward Iran, President Donald Trump announced on October 13th that he cannot and will not make this certification. He also cited the Iranian regime's destabilizing activity, including support for terrorist proxies in the Middle East, its financing of terrorism around the world, and its ballistic missile program as part of the totality of concerns he has with the Iranian regime. The refusal by President Trump to make the certification under the Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act of 2015 does not mean that the United States has withdrawn from the deal. It means that the administration will work closely with Congress and international partners to address what President Trump calls the JCPOA's many serious flaws.
So that the Iranian regime can never threaten the world with nuclear weapons. These include the deal's sunset clauses that in just a few years will eliminate key restrictions on Iran's nuclear program. The flaws in the deal also include insufficient enforcement and near total silence on Iran's missile programs.
Congress has already begun the work to address these problems, President Trump said.
As we have seen in North Korea, the longer we ignore a threat, the worse that threat becomes. It is why we are determined that the world's leading sponsor of terrorism will never obtain nuclear weapons.
President Trump expressed the hope that new U.S. measures directed at the Iranian regime, including new sanctions against Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps pursuant to a counterterrorism authority, will compel Iran to reevaluate its pursuit of terror at the expense of its people and will help bring about a future of peace, stability, and prosperity in the Middle East.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.